Nice to catch up with Casey Martin. Casey, if you don't know the story, former pro golf player, now the fine golf coach at the University of Oregon, but he qualified for the 2012 U.S. Open, winning a sectional at Emerald Valley Golf Club, and he finished 9 over after the second day of the tournament. The cut line was 8 over. He was educated, played at Stanford University, and, of course, he challenged, of course, the PGA to be able to use a cart because of a birth defect that he has in his left leg. But, Casey, you know, as I watched you go around that course on television the first couple of days at the U.S. Open, and I thought back to the challenge that you had to have a golf cart and everything, and I wondered what was going through your mind during the course of those 2 rounds.
You know, trying to survive the golf course is what I was thinking about. I didn't have time to really think much anything else. It was the U.S. Open is, especially at Olympic Club, is about the sternest test you're ever going to find in golf. And I was pretty much stressed out. When you're stressed out, you don't think about too much. But I also need to say I was having a blast, too. It was great to just get to compete a little bit. I hadn't competed in 6 years. And so out of the blue, my voyage back into golf was the U.S. Open. And that was a tough task. But I was just excited to be out there competing with great players and hitting shots and trying to not embarrass myself on that golf course.
Tell everybody how you did qualify by winning that sectional, because that was a story in itself.
Yeah. You know, I just decided to qualify for it. I hadn't competed, like I said, in 6 years, but it was at Olympic, and I kind of been hitting the ball pretty well when I was messing around with my guys. And so I signed up for it, got through the first stage pretty easily, and then went to the second stage, which was one of our golf courses in Eugene, that Emerald Valley, which is a golf course that, you know, kind of fits my game, a real good course here in the Eugene area. So I went for it, and, you know, I hadn't played the week leading up to it. We were at the national championships at Riviera with the team and really didn't touch a club for 7 days before I showed up for the tournament. And maybe that's what I needed to do more often. Just don't think, don't try, and go play. And it worked pretty well. I shot, I forget exactly what I shot, maybe 4 or 5 under and qualified and onto Olympics, so it was pretty fun.
Did you think there was something karma about all of this? I mean, I thought about it. I read the story about how you qualified, and I thought somebody that laid off for 6 years and then all of a sudden says, you know what, I think I will try to make the U.S. Open, and it all worked out that way, and the fact that it was the Olympic Club also factored into that. There's something that's karma about all of that.
You know, I don't know what it is. Might have been some good fortune and some good luck, too, involved in it, but you know, the last 6 years since I retired from professional golf, I really worked on my game kind of off the side. When you teach, you kind of learn and you realize watching. I've had some great players at Oregon, too, and I've kind of watched what they've done and naturally and try to incorporate certain things. And it kind of worked from the standpoint that my golf game really was pretty good leading up to it. And that's part of the reason that I tried to qualify is, like, you know, I'm playing pretty well. So it was fun to just go compete, though, and even though I didn't make the cut, I came really close, and you know, I beat some great players and had a lot of fun, and so it was a win-win.
Ian, you know, you bring up a very good point about not having played for 6 years, and then you're playing in the U.S. Open, so you kind of had a perspective of being able to look at the game today after having been away from it for that period of time. Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts were about the professional golf game today.
Well, it's really, really good. I mean, the quality of golf out there is incredible. The golf courses are extremely difficult, and yet those guys are shooting anywhere from 15 to 25 under par a week. So to be able to do that, I mean, there's just guys just loaded at every tour, not just the PGA, it's the Nationwide or the web.com now, and all the mini tours. It's just loaded with guys, and with the conditioning that is now, with the guys, they're playing longer, so players are playing in their mid to late 40s successfully. And really the spots haven't increased. So you have a wider range of players that are playing longer and the same amount of spots. And the results are the scores and the quality of golf is through the roof. So, you know, trying to compete against those guys is really hard, but it's also fun to do it. I was able to do it without a lot of pressure and I wasn't playing for my life. I was just playing for fun. And so I had that advantage and my mind was pretty clear and pretty free and I was excited, so I was in a good state of mind. But, you know, the game of golf is in good hands right now, and there's some great young players and some pretty stout old guys, too. So it's pretty impressive.
When you think about the competition on the Pro Tour today, Casey, also the travel involved, they're not playing just in the United States. They're flying off to Singapore. They're going to China. They're going to Dubai and all of that stuff. It kind of blows my mind a little bit about how a body, an athlete who has to have continuity and consistency in something that they do professionally are able to maintain that consistency. What does one have to do today to be an effective professional golfer?
Well, I think that's a good point. It is hard with all the travel. The guys that get to that level, though, that have the ability to go to Singapore like next week to play in that, or in Thailand, wherever they're, you know, some of those late season events, they're the best players in the world. And so they've kind of earned that right to be able to do that. And so they're getting paid an enormous amount of money. Obviously, to be able to make that, they've made a bunch. So they can fly comfortably. I mean, a lot of those guys, I'm not saying they're flying privately over to Asia, but they're flying privately a lot around the States. And so the travel, I think, for some of the top players has become easier. And I think that does help. It helps with that continuity you're talking about. When you're traveling every week trying to compete at the highest level, there are some things, some kickbacks that these guys do have that didn't exist years ago when they were, you know, driving and stuff like that. So the game has become easier that way. Guys are in better shape. I think the knowledge and nutrition and how to get your body in shape, I think guys are able to do that easier. But it's still a grind. I mean, when you play golf every day, it's a grind mentally, and it can be a grind physically. So it's amazing what they do. But if you got paid millions of dollars to go play golf every day, I think you'd find a way to do it too. So
You're not a muckraker, but you successfully sued the PGA Tour back in 2001 for the right to use a golf cart during competition under the Americans with Disability Act. I mentioned that you suffer from a birth defect, and now many years later, you know, you've had a chance probably to put it in its proper perspective and everything. What have you come up with? What was the positives of doing what you did?
Well, the positives during I got to pursue a game that I love, and it was going to be taken away from me, or I was going to be prevented from doing it. So I got to pursue my passion, which is, I think, anybody that has a disability that has gone through some kind of ordeal, you really don't want special treatment. The last thing I wanted was really to stand out or be different, but I just wanted the opportunity. And so I think that's what I got. I received through that court ordeal an opportunity to play at the highest level, and I got to taste it for a while. I wasn't able to make it as far as I always wanted to, but I was in the game, you know, and I think that's what anybody just really wants is to have an opportunity to do that and, you know, rise or fall on your own merits, not on kind of being prevented. So that's what I was grateful for, that I simply had the opportunity to do it. And the other cool thing is because I was kind of the one that went through it, some other people are going to have the opportunity also. And I don't, you know, one of the arguments against me is that I was going to change the game and everyone was going to be riding. And fortunately, that's not the case. But there have been a couple people that have serious, you know, health issues that were able to ride and have been given that opportunity as well. And so I think that's a good thing to, you know, create opportunity for them too.
Yeah, that was where I was going to next, because I was one of those that on this network publicly supported you and what you were doing, because the argument was by even a lot of veteran pro players that, hey, this will change the game. There are going to be players that will have unfair advantages. We've got to walk. They should be able to walk. And I said, that's a bunch of bunk. And yet it did not change the game. What was it they were fearful of, do you think, Casey?
Well, I mean, I think there was an element that, you know, you're going to open up a can of worms. If one guy rides, then where do you cross the line to have somebody with a lesser ailment? Do they get to ride? How do you do that? And I think that's a valid, you know, fear that they had. The issue was they had a pretty easy case in mind. Mine was defined by the law, Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm legally disabled. I have, you know, I was a perfect case they could have made an accommodation for and really abided by the law, and they chose not to. So that was unfortunate. But I think going forward now, they can at least, you know, have the experience, the track record of knowing that if someone is legally disabled and the accommodation makes sense, you know, do it. And so I wasn't asking for any accommodation to hit a shot or to get any advantage on the course I played. I just needed a lift from point A to point B, and that was a reasonable accommodation in my case. And they unfortunately failed to see it that way, but the courts did. So it worked out. So I think going forward, that's what, you know, people and decision makers have to bring into account is if it's a reasonable accommodation, and then you make the case. Had they really looked at my, they made some mistakes, I think, but had they really looked at my case, looked at me, and then said, look, it's not a reasonable accommodation. They might have won the case. I mean, I don't think so, but they chose not to even look at it. They said, we don't make any exceptions. We don't you know, budge for anybody, and that's just not what the law says. So the courts made them budge, and I'm glad they did. So I think going forward, people in those decisions just, you know, need to weigh all the options, I guess, and really look at it pretty seriously, which they have to now.
It's good to connect with you again, Casey, and I really enjoyed watching you during the U.S. Open Golf Championship, and thank you for sharing your story, and continued good luck up there as the golf coach at the University of Oregon. I appreciate your time. You're welcome back here anytime on Sports Byline.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks anytime. You got it.
Casey Martin with us again, former pro golfer and now the golf coach at the University of Oregon, and he qualified for the U.S. Open, winning a sectional at Emerald Valley Golf Club up in the state of Oregon. And, of course, he only played the first two rounds, but still a great experience. We continue with more of you and America's Sports Talk Show.